Now broadcasting the Webcomic Beacon.
Hello and welcome to episode 85 of the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com, and we are hosted on the Rampage Network, a webcomics community and also a webcomics hosting site at rampagenetwork.com. I'm Fess of Fessworks.com, and we only got one co-host with me today, and that's Mark Savory of AutumnLake.com.
Hello.
And this week, we're going to be attempting to talk about editorial comics, but we'll see how the show goes. And we got a few people on the in the studio with us right now who are going to be speaking with. The first person who has actually done our cover art for episode 35, it is Alyssa Rose of GirlVsRobot.com. That's GirlVsRobot.com. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
Well, no problem. Well, thank you for coming on the show.
Am I supposed to say anything else? Hi.
That works.
I'm an artist. I'm not good with word things. They're for somebody else to make.
Somebody tweet that right now. I'm an artist. I'm not very good at word things.
Word things. That's awesome.
Just at the last minute, I have two people I added to the show. One is, if you've seen him on Twitter, and it's Tweetix, or Jason, rather, from Tweetix.com. Welcome.
Hello.
And we also have another Jason from, you might know him as That Arger Guy, from ArgerComic.com.
Hello?
Yes, hello. basically, we got a lot of twits on the show. part of the reason I'm bringing these additional people on the show than originally planned is because I know that they've all talked on Twitter a lot, including on political issues and the like. Let's do some introductions that go into your specific comic. Alyssa.
Alyssa. Yeah.
Tell us about your comic, Girl vs. Robot.
At this point, it's kind of changed from when we first made it. Mm-hmm. But at this point, it's really a daily editorial cartoon with an op-ed piece. That kind of comes with it. And, yeah. Oh, wow. I'm really...
It's all right. It's all right. Okay, so when you started this comic, you said it's changed a little bit. So when you started this comic, what were, like, your original goals or ideas for this?
Initially, we were going to have sort of cute characters that had... you know, that it, through their interactions and stuff, like, and they would be stereotypical, like a liberal and a Republican and a libertarian, and that we were just sort of going to have this sort of silly sitcom with political undertones. And it, the main character was a political cartoonist, and I had never done political cartoons and didn't really know very much about it, but I thought it was kind of a cool idea. And what were, you know, quote unquote, her political cartoons sort of overtook the comic. Mm-hmm. There were actually robots in the initial concept, but there aren't now.
So. Might you bring them back? Might you go back to the little ones or with the girl and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think we might do little standalone arcs and stuff, mm-hmm. especially if we want to take a week off. We create like a story arc and
a week off of politics. I suppose you're doing your comics right now. That's a little bit more, you know, right after things happen. So you kind of.
If I start before like 7 or 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. A couple days I did. I mm-hmm. started early, and by the time, like the next morning, it was really kind of old news. So I really have to start as late as possible. Otherwise, so I can't, I mean, I cannot build up a buffer at all. I guess I could do like a bunch of stock illustrations of famous people and be able to stick them into stuff if something comes up, but I don't.
Or you could go back to your little sitcom stuff, that's the stuff that's not as timely, and if you're running behind, and you may have a reserve of those types.
Yeah, I mean, we've thought about it. The thing is that it was confusing people who were coming when we started doing both, it mm-hmm. became sort of confusing. There were people who wanted just the editorial cartoons, and there were people who wanted just the story. Uh-huh. And so we decided to split them up. And when I have a little more time, right now I've got a lot of projects going on with work, but when I have a little more time, I might do like a whole second comic.
Okay.
Which is kind of the idea. Yeah.
All right, cool. Now we're going to move on to Tweetix. Jason, tell us about Tweetix.
Well, Tweetix is a kind of a gag-a-day comic based entirely off of tweets that I kind of scavenge the public timeline, my friends list, pretty much everywhere for. So what kind of ends up coming out is sort of this random amalgamation of, you know, miscellaneous thoughts from everybody from, 10-year-olds to, 65-year-old, housewives or whatever. it's a little bit of everything. But what I basically kind of end up doing is trying to kind of catch what's basically on people's minds and sometimes a big group of people are thinking. And it's, I mean, my basic filter process is this funny? And it kind of goes from there.
Well, very cool. And are you starting to get like people like trying to do something or send you their ideas for stuff? Or
I haven't had so much of that. I've had some people say, hey, why don't you look out for a tweet about Sarah Palin or something like that? just because, I don't know, I guess, well, I suppose it would be amusing to draw. what ends up happening is because I'm just taking these, sometimes I'm taking at replies from people, directed replies, mm-hmm. And they'll, I'll take that, I'll make that into a comic, a couple of days later. And people will just, kind of flip out a little bit and say, hey, this is the conversation, that it was a part of. And because I don't pay attention to what was before or what came after. I take that little bit. So it's like someone's little mind fart ends up manifesting into a multiple panel comic.
That's pretty great.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a real hoot to do, and I get some pretty interesting material once I sift through the the 500 people a day who say just trying this Twitter thing out and I don't get it. So, which surprisingly is a lot of Twitter traffic. You don't even know.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Well, alrighty then. And last but not least, of course, people who've listened to the show already know about Jason and Ardra. But Jason, if you can just give us a synopsis of Ardra, if you will.
It's just the story of a woman who's a scientist, and she's raising twin daughters as a sort of ongoing science experiment, you might say.
Well, that is very brief an explanation, but I guess it'll do. It's mostly a comedy, and it doesn't sound as terrible as he says.
Oh no!
I mean, she's not like some sort of vicious person doing experiments on them. But
no,
yeah, it's more like a social experiment.
Yeah, you can say that. Just kind of a fish out of water type of scenario.
Alrighty, and let's see here. All right, the topic: editorial comics. Alyssa, I'm going to start with you did you used to read a lot of editorial comics in the paper?
Not specifically, but I used to read the paper a lot, and you can't miss them. When I lived in I lived in Madison, Wisconsin for a little while, and when I would pick up the isthmus, I would turn right to Red Meat. So, and that could be called definitely an editorial comic. So yeah, I mean, I guess I did. I sort of not specifically. Like I said, before I started Girl vs. Robot, I thought political cartoons were kind of a neat idea, but I wasn't like a big... I was really more into comic books, like, you know, X-Men and stuff like that.
But don't say it like you're ashamed.
It depends on the company I'm in. I suppose this company, I shouldn't be ashamed.
Oh, no. If anybody should be ashamed, it should be, well, mostly me, but... What about you, Jason One?
Well, I moved around a lot as a kid, so I hung out with a lot of older people. Mm-hmm. And so I started drinking coffee and watching 60 Minutes when I was like 9. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the environment I grew up with. I had a very, very politically charged household, had, you know, got my first, you know, Dukakis, you know, yard sign when I was a kid. And,
I remember that.
Yeah. Dukakis Benson.
Yeah, I, you know, and like in this context, I can feel not like so much of a dork saying that, but I was always really interested in politics and how it was represented visually. My background prior to going back to comics, I'm actually a painter with a heavy influence from the kind of pop art movement, which was very kind of a lot of very socially relevant. So that kind of went all over the place, didn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. Life story. Well, Jason, too. What about you and newspaper editorial comics?
Oh, I used to read them quite a bit when I was younger. I read the newspapers quite a bit. Mike Peters was always a good one. He's the guy who does Mother Goose and Grimm. He was more of an editorial cartoonist back in the day. Mm-hmm. I like his work. Usually the more liberal types are better than the conservative types just because they don't quite go on the stereotypes as much.
Did you used to read Doonesbury?
Doonesbury's okay. It can get a bit stale at times, but it's not bad.
Well, I was going to say
more
preachy.
Into the character development these days, I think, than the actual editorializing.
Well, ever since he had like this big like changeover thing, I remember him doing like a war arc, and then like some guy lost his legs or something like that, and then
he
did like
a thing,
360. No, that 180. 180.
Yeah, 360 would land right back.
360
would going
like to the same place. Yeah.
Let's spin around.
Are we XKCD now? We're talking.
No, we're not talking about XKCD. Let's see, we got. Oh. Who's making noises?
Oops.
You were talking.
Mark, what about you? I kind of forget about you because you're so quiet now.
Welcome to my world. What about me? About politics?
Well, like editorial comics and newspapers and such.
Well, when we got the newspaper, I used to read them. Of course, I probably went more for the regular fun.
Oh, yeah.
But I used to watch 60 Minutes when I was a kid, and NewsHour, and McLaughlin Group, and all of that kind of stuff. So I was always kind of interested in it. It's interesting what Jason says, that the liberal artists are more interesting than the conservative ones. I think that's true. I'm not quite sure how to put it into words, but I'd almost say there was a creativity gap.
Yeah, you're an artist. You're not good with word things.
I'm not good with the word things. Not even typography.
I understand. I have a hard time with typography, too. It's like, Well, I'm glad that everybody likes liberal artists better. That's good for me.
Well, I think what... Probably, this is probably true of the vast majority of artists here, just speaking very broadly, aren't conservative. I mean, some of them are, but most of them aren't, and I think that may have to do with, I don't know how to put it, life experience or having an open outlook, or I don't know what it is, where a conservative person may, not to insult conservatives, but they may not have that same outlook or that same willingness to explore outside what they know. And maybe that's why the humor is always a bit sharper, maybe is more on target with the liberal cartoonists than the conservative ones like a Mallard Fillmore or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I read that, it's just kind of shrill. And half the time it's not even funny. I'm trying to find the joke in there, but I don't know. Ted Kennedy drinks! Ha ha! Okay.
What's weird is the it's like a cultural thing. Like, it has nothing to do with the issues. The conservative take on issues isn't less funny or something. But it's like, I think that there's a culture that builds up around the parties. There's a culture that builds up around being a liberal. There's a culture that builds up around being a conservative.
Right.
And I think that the conservative culture is, you know, separate from the issues, is very conservative. So one of the Jasons was saying that, I don't know how to differentiate you if we're calling you Jason.
one sounds like he's on a phone.
Yeah, the one on the phone, I think, was saying that now I forget what you were saying. That's great.
It was really important.
Happens all the time.
I should have had more coffee, really. I've only had half a cup of coffee today. Stereotyping.
Right.
Stereotyping is much more acceptable in conservative culture, which means that there's a much smaller group of people who can find it funny, because some people will be offended by it. And it's not just racial stereotyping, although that's where, I mean, especially lately, it's been sort of horrendous and really off-putting to people. But
right.
In general, I think that it's like I want to make the point that this is different than the issues. Conservative issues and conservative culture are totally different. The culture just built up because you have, you know, in a different time, it could be a totally different thing.
If I can just chime in for a second.
No, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I think a lot of it too is that, at least for my part, I think that the conservative movement is easier boxed, is easier kind of encapsulated into kind of, you know, like, you know, like she was saying, stereotypes or whatnot. I mean, we can, you know, take that that whole, you know, let me be armed, get the government out of my backyard, blah blah blah, and turn it into something, you know, very very simple and polarizing. It's easily identifiable because, you know, the way I look at a lot of political cartooning is, you're dealing with iconography and easy recognizable quick images for that, you know, 30 to 60 seconds that a piece is consumed.
Yeah.
And I think you're easier able to capture, at least from my viewpoint, easier able to capture conservative notions than, you know, the stereotypical, you know, liberal, you know, latte drinking, NPR listening group. I mean, you know,
you have a point. You have a point, though, because it may be true that liberal cartoons are funnier. Thank you. But it's also true that there's that cartooning as newspapers are struggling, and independent newspapers specifically are struggling, and a lot of independent newspapers are also the more liberal newspapers. There's a lot of there's like a conservative hold on political cartooning. And so they may be, you know, in the opinion of those present, less fun to read. But there's a lot of cartooning. And I think it's because of that. I think it's because it's easier to express a lot of the more stereotyped stuff. But there's a new kind of cartooning that's been happening lately that is much more interesting to me, I think, than just like, ho-ho, here's a funny-looking poor guy trying to do something. Or, you know what I mean? Like, it's just more nuanced.
Well,
and I mean, originally, cartoons were much more nuanced than, you know, caricature.
There were more escapism, if anything, when they first came out. I think, but I was
I mean, there was very similar to you say escapism. They were actually kind of similar to propaganda art. but in a free
That stuff
press.
Too. Oh yeah, you're right. Now I got to really think about it. Yeah, yeah.
It's like
some of them
are
pretty nasty. A lot.
So they really were. Yeah. Oh yeah. Wow. Well, I was going to say that. Well, I think especially with, like, for entertainment things, I think there's already a bias for that if it's an entertainment type of outlet that it tends to be a more liberal crowd. That may or may not be true. I don't know the statistics, but like Hollywood is predominantly liberal as far as the actors are concerned, I believe. And the same thing could go for the arts mostly. It seems that maybe there's not really a whole lot of like liberal political editorial cartoonists out there, because maybe they're actually in the funnies making real comics, so to speak.
Ow!
Real
my feelings.
You know, actually.
But again, no. I mean, that's a culture difference. Again, it's
right.
A culture, and actually, it has nothing to do with the issues or the conservative issues versus liberal issues. It's just a like there's these two cultures that have built up around the issues, and it's sort of false. Like, I don't think that the two really have to go together, and I think the libertarians and the internet kind of prove that lately, because there's this whole new culture of libertarianism being built up on the internet now. It's very different from, you know, conservative Republican culture, but has some of the same issues. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that's a good place to take a quick break, and when we come back, more C-SPAN.
The Webcomic Beacon is an affiliate of The Geek Media. The Geek Media has a number of geek-related podcasts, blogs, and videos for you to enjoy. Check out thegeekmedia.com. Have news, milestones, questions, or comments? Send your audio clips or email to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com.
One camera.
Oh, that's nice. Real comics. I like it. I don't know what it is. I've seen conservative cartoons and even conservative programs that are openly conservative. They're not just old-fashioned stuff, but they just aren't funny to me.
They're so serious.
Every so often, yeah, there's a gag in there. I chuckle at most of the time. I don't know what it is. I just...
Fox had their, like, version of The Daily Show. Do you remember that? And it wasn't funny.
Yeah.
The Fox version of The Daily Show is any news thing they have already.
The whole Fox is fake news. No, yeah. I mean, but... no, they had, they had a joke show that was supposed to be a joke show.
Ted Kennedy drinks! I mean, it's like the only thing... I don't know. Obama madness! I mean, it's... it just boggles my mind.
I got crap for the Obama madness thing, man.
I like the Obama madness. It was awesome.
Good.
Thank you. People got really angry about that. It was funny.
Well, maybe they didn't scroll down. I mean, I just looked at the top. I was like, wait, I thought she was liberal. And then I scroll down. Satire.
Are you doing a color version of that piece?
You know, I could. I hadn't thought of it actually.
Maybe you should sell it as a print.
I set up a Zazzle. I did it. I took a plunge and I made a poster. And then I was like, "Ooh, I can make a skate deck." So I did that too.
Awesome.
You could do a color version like the movie poster in those garish movie poster colors.
I should do that. I'm not very good at color. I was talking to somebody recently about that.
Best is your boy then.
Well,
yeah, I can't. I'm really not good at color.
I'm not an amateur colorist, and I'm terrible if I don't have a preset palette to work from. No, you know, so okay, so you're bad at word things and coloring. Okay, so.
Oh, shush. I'm really not that bad at words. I'm just very shy. Like,
aww.
Really, really shy, so I'm, like, nervous.
Oh, well, then you're very fortunate that Tanya is not here today. And I'm serious.
I think you have two people, like, shyer than you here. There's me and there's the other Jason.
And Jason said,
I think we lay equal claim to the title of shyest.
No,
I guess that's what, when you put people together who read comic books as kids, they're probably all going to be like, hi.
Hi.
Okay. Hi. No, no. No, we're all just going, ooh, it's a girl. Yay.
No.
Way to stereotype.
Girl. Yeah, seriously.
You do the your comic. It's all in these wonderful cross hatches and everything else.
It's a brush.
And I'm what?
It's a brush.
It's a brush.
It's not a brush.
Are you sure?
It's a layer. Yeah. What I did is I spent some time. I actually did all the cross hatching. I did a gigantic thing of cross hatching, and then I saved it as a layer in a template.
Oh, okay. Here, so I thought you were using the hatch brush.
Yeah. So I don't use a brush. I just mask it, basically. And I have different layers of it, and I mask it off.
Do you know what fascinates me about what you just said that you do? It's really so much like putting together the old kind of newspaper comic.
Yeah.
In so many ways. You do this wonderful editorial comic, and they would have to use these masks of the dot patterns.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Halftone. Yep. That's actually how I learned.
The bend die or bend day, they would have to cut it out to shape and paste it on and stuff. That's so awesome.
Yeah. When I was younger, I did some of that, not for cartoons and papers, but I was learning different stuff. And one of the things I learned was halftones and masking and airbrushing. You use a lot of masking with airbrushing. So I, when I work in Photoshop, I just do a lot of masking and layers. Because of that. And I tend to work up, so I don't tend to, like, erase stuff. I tend to just use white over black, over white, over black, over... Like, so I'll just have... the layers are actually, like, if you were to undo them, they'd be, like, layers on a paper, kind of. But you can... It's fun to do it that way.
Cool. Is it a relatively quick process for you? I mean, I'm sure it is compared to how you used to do it back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
I know it is for me, because I hate whiteout, and I used to have to use that and tried to use an ink pen. And
Yeah. Well, and especially if you're trying to use, like, really tiny nibs and stuff over whiteout, it doesn't work. It compresses the whiteout, so you end up getting, like, an indentation where your pen went, which doesn't ever look good. But, Photoshop is definitely has sped me up. Like, these cartoons, like I said, I cheat because I have the I already did the cross-hatching.
Right.
And it's not really cheating, but it's, I do, and a lot of, like, any of the detail cross-hatching you see, I've done that time for that comic only. It's only, like, the broad areas that I use the layer.
Well, that's fair.
These are all, are these all done in the computer, or are they any of it
all
done?
All on the computer. I have a tablet, and like I said, we decide what we're doing at 8. I'm drawing by 8:30 or 9, and I put them out at 11 my time, which is midnight East Coast. So, I never spend more than a couple of hours on these. But it's really cool because I'm getting faster. And one of the problems I always had was that I felt like I wasn't fast. Like, I could do a lot of really good illustration, but I couldn't do it quickly enough. And honestly, these days it's really important to be fast because prices have gone down, what you can charge when you're freelancing.
Mm-hmm.
Because of
competition and
outsourcing.
Wait. So you start a comic about 8 or 9 and you get your comic done by about 11? So, like, 3 or 4 hours, and you're done?
Usually not. I mean, not that long. Usually it's 2
Okay,
hours.
And you're thinking you're not fast enough? I think you're envy of some of web cartoons out there.
I think I wasn't. I think I've become much faster. Like, it used to be something that I wanted to be better at, and I think this is helping me to be better at it for sure.
Cool.
If I spend a lot of time on something, though, it looks better. The cartoons are kind of rough.
Right. But if there's any rule about webcomics and traffic and readers, the more often you update, the better off you be. Even though the quality may go down, but the less often you update, if the quality goes up, you might be able to retain the readers. It's a weird calculation, and part of it's chance. But anyway, sorry, a derailment. I'm trying to move back to talking about paper editorial comics. A while back, a few months back, we should have talked about it on the show, but I think we just mentioned it. There was like this conference for editorial cartoonists to figure out what they can do to save newspapers because, because apparently they can't do it online either or something like that. And I was gonna say that, well, for me anyway, since I'm the most non-political person on this entire show today. I'm trying to listen to more news podcasts, but when
we
it
want
came,
to start one actually that would be fun.
Well, I can help you out with that if you have any. A quick note.
Fess is the jack of all trades.
No. My assistance can be as simple as to anybody who's interested in knowing how we do our podcast. Who wants an idea of how to do their own? I can tell you how we do ours. And if you go to our homepage at webcomicbeacon.com, and underneath the banner, if you click About Us, and you scroll down a little bit, you'll find an area called How We Do It, and you click right there, and basically we'll tell you almost step by step process of how we prepare the show, and then how we get together, record, and put everything together. So that might be a good resource for anybody looking to start a podcast. So that is where I can at least help you.
If you're talking about the demise of the newspaper and how that relates to editorial cartooning, I would suggest to anybody who's interested in this to go to Red Meat's page and read his. He's got an "Oh my God, newspapers are dying" notice. And he talks about how his webcomic, because he puts it on the web, doesn't make any money. And he only ever got $10 to $20 per week from the syndication and the alternative newspapers that his strip was in.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been doing it for 20 years. And he's running out of he's not going to be able to support his comic if it keeps up. And it's going to. I mean, there's no reason to believe that, you know, there's any way to save the newspapers. It just, there's not.
The editorial, in particular, the editorial cartoonists are even worse off right now than the strip cartoonists are. Much worse off. They're dying rapidly. Dying off the newspaper rapidly. It's kind of sad.
Well, it's one of the first things, and what he's, in his, if you go to his site, it's really cool. One of the things he says is that the first thing they're cutting, as the newspapers run out of money, the first thing they cut is their cartoons. But which doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because when you poll people, the first thing they open to in their newspaper is the cartoon, right?
Right.
They want to see the editorial cartoon. So,
I disagree. I'm thinking of the other ones, but go ahead.
Well,
cartoons in general, they want to see.
Cartoons. They want to, the visual, So, and he's talking about alternative indie papers where they usually syndicate one cartoon.
Right.
Yeah. So, But what I thought was interesting, and I think is worth talking to webcomic people about. Mm-hmm. There are people who make money off of webcomics. It does happen. And my question is, this is a guy, and I know a lot of people like this, who are artists from before the internet was a bit, because we've only really been doing, there's still art directors who want you to mail your stuff in. Still. And so it's not that long ago, that syndication was how you made money as a cartoonist. And the whole web cartoon thing is really new. So I guess my question would be, is there something he's doing wrong? And not that he's at fault or a bad person, right, but just because he's older and he's not as acquainted with the internet, is there something that he could do better?
I think so, yeah.
Is there something that cartoonists can do to save their cartoons without saving newspapers? Because I don't think we're going to save the newspapers.
No,
that's awful to say.
Not unless you make the newspapers have actually more comics than I might actually go and buy newspapers, because I stopped buying newspapers.
We'll save them by having them buy all of our comics and put them in.
Right.
If I can pipe in just for a second,
I think
the death of newspapers is just kind of symptomatic of kind of a larger trend and how we're consuming information anymore. You know, we're moving away from those bits of information, those repositories of information like that. We want this sort of real time feed on data. And as the baby boomers kind of either, you know, acclimate or, you know, kind of fade away.
Die.
You know,
nice.
Sorry, all euphemisms aside. I think we're going to see, you know, more people doing what we do in all aspects. I don't know if, like, you know, Twitter is going to be, you know, that kind of rapidly updated data source is going to be it, but I think newspapers,
it's definitely going to look a lot like that, like it, even if it's not it. I totally agree with you.
Yeah. I think we're going more towards a kind of feed based information society where everyone's going to have their Kindle like devices with, you know, 30 different RSS feeds and, you know, going into it. And that's where you get your information from, as opposed to sitting down and reading the newspaper, which is
I'll give you a for instance, though. I mean, if we're talking about current events, this might be why the newspaper, like more than books, is having trouble. If there's an earthquake in China, if I was reading the newspaper, I would find out about it tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm watching CNN, I'll find out about it in a couple of hours.
Yeah.
Right. If I'm on Twitter, I have a friend who has a friend in China, and I find out about it a minute after it happens.
Mm,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and I've seen this. I've actually found out about many earthquakes that I either would never have found out about because they were kind of smallish, like, you know, 5.6 or something. Like, not gigantic, but big enough to shake someone's house, you know? Like,
yeah.
Or just stuff found out about it so much faster than I would have found out about it if I was reading the paper or watching CNN. And I mean, this is going to seem sort of funny because I criticize them all the time, but I make a point of I don't sit down and watch the news.
Mm-hmm.
I will find clips of what they're saying. I'll watch, you know, highlights, but I can't stand the 24-hour news networks.
I
was going to say, when you start adding pundits, you need to do more than just give you the news. They have to talk about it. It's like, I just want to know what happened. That's all I want to know.
I was thinking about this when Walter Cronkite died, that everybody was saying, you know, there's not going to be another Walter Cronkite, and that's true, because in his day, they had three guys. That was it.
Yeah.
Three guys doing the news.
It's true.
Now, with this 24-hour news cycle...
I mean...
...inspiration to put content on there when you don't have any.
Yeah, I was actually about to comment on that. I mean, you know, this is why I think you know, newspapers and the news networks have issues with viewership and readership, because they spend an entire, you know, four or five news cycles talking about Michael Jackson's autopsy results. We like the bright and shiny. We don't want content necessarily.
The thing is like, they say that they can't fill it up, but if you spend like 10 minutes on the internet, you can find a million things going on that really need attention.
Mm-hmm.
That they're not giving attention to on the major news networks. I feel like there's also, like, not a clear line between news and op-ed anymore. I think people see op-ed... And part of that might be the blogs, because a lot of blogs aren't they're op-ed by nature. I mean, these people aren't going out and, you know, finding the news.
Yeah.
You know, they're not reporters. So a lot of it's op-ed. And a lot of blogs that, you know, that do sort of report the news, but they also give their opinion. And I mean, I'm doing that, right? But I'm calling myself an editorial.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying
right.
This is an opinion. But there's a lot of news presented, or a lot of opinion presented as news. And I mean, a lot. Like, that's a lot of what CNN is. And CNN's the best, in my opinion. And that you still have Lou Dobbs and, you know,
They've gotten a bit Fox-ish in the last few years, I've noticed.
They have. Whenever the person reading the news is rolling their eyes about it, there's something wrong.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, they kind of don't have a choice if they want to compete with Fox. And that's sad that they would want to.
Yeah, it's
sad that people watch Fox, but they do.
Unless they're watching it for comedic purposes. But right now, the only thing news that I'm listening to right now, because I used to let my have anything to do with the news at all whatsoever. I've actually started to get into some news. So I listen to the NPR Hourly podcast and the BBC Global News AM and PM.
BBC is mostly good. They have their biases,
right? But
I love NPR.
They're gonna have an outside opinion or outside view than say inside the U.S., where it's hard to get an unbiased or nearly unbiased opinion in the U.S. Where I can get somebody that's not even in the U.S. to talk about it, so I can get a better opinion, I think. But
I'll tell you something I used to do when I was younger. Before the big cable thing, we didn't have cable, but what I would do is I would watch Dan Rather or Peter Jennings. Peter Jennings is totally awesome compared to Dan Rather, but anyway, I would watch network news, and then I'd flip over and watch, after that was done, I'd watch the News Hour on PBS. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing how different the lead stories were. Like, PBS, they wouldn't have some big, you know, Dan Rather's all bouncing up in his seat, up and down, about how exciting this news story is. And, you know, they wouldn't even mention it on the News Hour. And I found that to be a good experiment. A good disciplined habit to get into is to watch this one, then flip over and watch that one. Because the News Hours always seem to be more realistic as far as what the main stories they were going to talk about. Here's something that's important.
Something else that I've been thinking about lately. I was in Atlanta recently, and just for a short time, I think just overnight in a hotel room. But I turned on the television, and there was a local news. And it was really cool. I mean, they were like really like out there reporting on stuff and talking about local politics and talking about, I mean, like really like and crimes and like news. And I guess I live in a very small town, and we don't really have
news
here. Yeah, but you know, I think in big cities, I think that we should. I'm not in a big city, but if I were, I would give a lot of my time and eyeballing to local news because I think they give better information.
It's more
than
relevant.
24-hour networks.
It's more relevant.
But stay away from the celebrity crap too. That helps.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Because it's local. I'd be interested to see how much audience, if you put together an internet site where somebody quick steal this idea and go make $1 million and cut me out of it, it's what's going to happen. But where you invite people to, you know, go to their city council meeting and take notes and report on it. You know,
like
what
work.
If you put all of that information in one place and you could like go and look at like real reporters, local reporters, you know, but the ground up blogger movement, but reporting instead of op-ed, I think would be really cool. It'd be really interesting and different. I don't know if there's an audience for it.
Well, blogging does have its drawbacks, as in it's not real reporting where you it's hard to really actually verify everything versus when you're a reporter, you actually have. You know, there are. I mean, am I right, or am I just
like the blogger doesn't have necessarily the education or the training or the experience that a reporter would have.
No. I'm saying that a blogger is...
Are you talking about credibility?
Credibility. A blog is a blog. But a valid news source is what I'm saying. Whether or not the thing is accurate, out of the blue, though,
okay, Daily Kos is, considered maybe not a credible news source, but definitely credible in terms of, op-ed pieces and stuff. People on the right don't consider them a credible news source. People on the left do.
Just read it for the articles.
The Huffington Post is almost certainly considered credible, and that's a blog, and it's always been a blog. So, I think that its credibility is built. They have to build it the same way that newspapers did a long time ago.
There's
not a lot of news reporting on blogs, but that doesn't mean that blogs couldn't report the news. Okay. There's less news reporting and there's more op-ed, or there's a mix of the two, like you see on the big major news networks, instead of really separating them and having, Walter Cronkite is different than, because that's what he did. He read the news. And if he had an opinion, if he wanted to roll his eyes, he would say, "This is only my opinion." Right. And he would say it, and he would separate his opinion from the facts.
But there'll never be another Walter Cronkite set.
That's not true. I don't believe it. I believe if there's never another Walter Cronkite, then we are seeing the fall of our civilization. There has to be another Walter Cronkite.
Well, that's been going on for 8 years. But anyway, Jason, wait. Jason, one. Yeah, you wanted to say something?
I think blog, not blog, I think what the effective problem is, and this has to do with New York Times, all the way down to, and I mean down, to Perez Hilton, it's an issue of standards in reporting. I worked in as a journalist for 7 years, and I was taught very old kind of methods of writing a news article, writing a feature article, writing an editorial. You look at a lot of paper news reporting, online writing for news sites and stuff, and people are not adhering to a lot of just traditional notions of how to put together an article. How to actually cite a source. I read an article, off of CNN the other day, that basically used one named source that had absolutely nothing to do with the story, but was brought in just kind of as someone to comment on the concept at large. And then the four other sources with pull quotes that they used were all unnamed sources for confidentiality reasons.
Hmm.
I mean, so this is basically a news story that could not be verified by anybody because everyone spoke under conditions of confidentiality with some random guy who's an expert in the general field that they were talking about but had no specific experience with the actual subject at hand. That lacks all sort of that takes away from their integrity and their credibility for me. And I think even if you have some 16-year-old kid writing a blog every week about some news source, if they're establishing standards and sticking with them, making it kind of verifiable and pulling the opinion out as much as humanly possible, then I think it's just as valid of a source as any other. But it's just maintaining integrity and maintaining standards, and I think that's what has really been kind of lost.
Absolutely.
Overall.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah. I totally agree with that. And I think that credibility, I mean, when the papers, I was reading about, I'm kind of into Civil War history right now. Don't ask me lots of specifics because it's a new thing that I'm into, so I'm learning a lot about it. I just never knew a whole lot about it.
Watch the Ken Burns series. You'll like that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I had known what I had learned in school, which is always, never very much information. But it's really interesting how newspapers had to assert themselves. And, they were like blogs. I mean, they were tiny. Some of them were just one page. And they were, they really had to build credibility. And, you know, we think of newspapers now as like the New York Times, you know, it's a stalwart, you know, but it hasn't always been like that. And I agree with you, Jason. I think that if somebody establishes standards, and they separate the editorial from the journalism, you know, I think that they would gain credibility very quickly.
Yeah.
In blogger culture, I really do. And I like how we went from saving editorial cartoons and dying newspapers to saving the news. But this is a really big, we cover this in Girl vs. Robot a lot, that the level of discourse is so low. You know, this is why I'm going to encourage people who agree with me to post too, please, because it makes me feel good. But I encourage people who don't agree with me to post, because I want, so long as we're not having like flame war arguments, I want to have measured conversations about these topics from, you know, from different point of views, from different opinions. And I think that's important, because that doesn't happen anymore. And I think that the movement to the internet, you know, from newspapers, I mostly like, which, you know, I'm not really going to be all gloom and doom about it. I like the internet. But what I don't like is that if I want to, I never have to see a Republican in any form other than a forum troll. If I want to, the only conservatives I'll ever see are trolls. And that doesn't really give me a very good understanding of the conservative. Well, maybe it does, but I would like to think it doesn't give me a very good idea of like where the conservatives are coming from.
See,
I'm not getting
That's the whole problem with Fox News, is it has a conservative bias, and it's a little bit more open about that bias than, say, CNN is. But bias is still bias. So if somebody's comfortable watching it, they're still not getting the straight story. The bias is still there.
Right. And on that note, the tape is about to fly off the spool here, so we're gonna have to go to break while I start up the next tape.
This is our 21st century studio equipment, state of the art.
The Webcomic Beacon is hosted on RampageNetwork.com. Be sure to check out our weekly live broadcast on TalkShoe.com. Listen in, chat, or call in at webcomicbeacon.com/live.
I want a news ticker, like those little stock tickers with the paper, but it prints out headlines so that I can look like an industrialist. I also need a monocle.
A monocle.
And a top hat.
Exactly. You know, and a cane. Well, you know where I'm going with this.
There was a comic called
Mr. Peanut.
That was called the 19th... There was a comic that was called The 19th Century Industrialist, and it's a pain in the ass to type out if you ever have to type it out. It used to update, but I don't know if it is anymore. That just totally reminded me of that. Mm. Anyway,
let me throw this out here real quick and see what you think. Maybe I'm totally off base. The problem with television and cable news today...
Aren't we waiting to record again?
No, when I flip the spools, it's like 5 seconds.
I don't want a gem to get like missed, so that's why I interrupted you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's okay.
What I think is the problem is this started not with the birth of the internet or the expansion of cable, but with reality shows.
Oh God.
With reality shows, which then you would have these series like if you remember Current Affair, you remember that?
Uh-huh.
Syndicated.
Oh, so Bill O'Reilly got it started in one of those, didn't he?
Yep. Yeah. Which one was he in?
You're talking about tabloid journalism now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and that really
hard copy and whatnot.
Hard copy. There's another one. Yeah, they just really seem to take off.
Yeah. And I don't know how much of you guys know about Japan, but it's like hard gay. No, it's not like hard gay, but hard copy made me think of. Sorry, I'm done. Otaku, I'm not even an otaku, which is pretty funny, but go ahead.
That's just my thought of it. I think that's where things started to go downhill, where journalism started to take a back.
Sensationalism.
Voyeurism, yeah. Sensationalism, yeah. You know, all these sort of feeding these lower things rather than the higher things. And that's why I think we may never see another Walter Cronkite, which depresses me.
Well, actually. I disagree. I think we are going to see another Walter Cronkite, and I think we're going to see it on the internet.
Place your bets.
He was close.
Well, I would actually agree, Mark, right, with you that there won't be another Cronkite because the circumstances that created Cronkite were singular. It was like three news networks and no such thing as reruns, right? So people had to either watch Cronkite or like some other two guys that weren't as interesting. you know, so hey, let's watch Cronkite. And he like, you know, quote unquote comes into your home and he's like that welcoming, reassuring friend or whatever.
He comes into your home.
I'll have a beer.
This is another way in which this So Jason, you're saying that because we have this polarized news, because if I'm a liberal, I can only see liberal news. I can watch MSNBC and read Daily Kos and just leave it at that. You're saying that there's not going to be a need for Walter Cronkite. And actually,
it's not that there won't be a need.
But there's not going to be a demand.
It's not that at all. It just won't happen. I mean, you got certain people that are just iconic. And it the circumstances that created these people, anyone else that's even similar to what they were, what they represented, is most likely never going to happen again. You may get something that's similar or close to it, but we'll never get our Dick Clark back. We'll never get our Walter Cronkite back.
I think I'm not on the correct wavelength. Because you guys are talking about like the iconic level of like the trusted man.
Well, actually, what I was thinking of specifically is concentration, right? You know, during Cronkite, you know, three networks. Okay, so one newsman to cover exactly 30% of the news, or 100% of the news. You know, 30% of the time. Well, whatever. I don't do math in my comic.
I don't either.
I leave that to other people. But no, what it is, you know, you had these comics or the comics, these three news networks, and you know, here's this one big guy. Well, now there's like 50 news networks, and there's still that one guy, but he isn't getting as much of the attention. As opposed to getting, you know, 30 million viewers, he's instead getting 3 million viewers. And the circumstances that created Walter Cronkite is he starts off with this huge pocket of people and maintains for so long, and people grow up with that. It was actually with the proliferation of cable and multiple channels, and now of course the internet, that a Cronkite cannot be created, in my opinion. The same thing with, say, Dick Clark or the Ed Sullivan Show. I mean, there was that whole hoopla back in the 90s about Oasis claiming they were bigger than the Beatles. Well, yeah. They had actually sold very, very well, Oasis had. But, you know, where people balked is they hadn't become part of a cultural movement like the Beatles had, because, Sullivan was, you know, a very, very singular thing at a very, very singular time. And we can't recreate Sullivan, you know, in that way. We can't recreate...
Build him stronger, faster than he was before.
Multiplicity. Mm-hmm. But I think, see... I was thinking about the pre-Civil War era, and at that time there were like very polarized news sources, and so if you wanted your news, I was talking about these little like scream sheets, basically you would just go and you would get the one that you agreed with.
yep.
And that's part of what led to the Civil War, because people were only preaching to the choir, which gave them the gumption to sort of to say crazy things.
like Fox News.
Like Fox News. And honestly, like Lou Dobbs on CNN. So CNN's not, doesn't have its hands clean anymore. I used to really like them, and I'm a little less pleased since they didn't really stand up to Lou Dobbs about it. And then MSNBC, I like them. I like Rachel Maddow. I like Rachel Maddow, but she sometimes can be a little snarky, and I don't think that has a place in the news.
Nope.
I don't mind if somebody comes on and has an opinion and they're snarky about it. It can even be really funny, but I don't think it has a place in reporting the news. No. I don't want my trusted reporter to be, or newsreader, whatever, to be rolling their eyes.
Right. They have to understand that there is the news, and then there is editorials. And what they're trying to do on the news is editorialize, and that's not right.
It's a combination of the editorializing, and also they can cherry pick their stories. So they only talk about what people are going to agree with. They don't challenge their audience. Yeah.
Now, I would say sensationalism and voyeurism and infotainment are also factors in that. Just like they can pick their stories, and they don't want to challenge the audience. They want to spoon feed the audience.
Right.
Certain things.
And, I want to say something really quick, okay, just to pimp my comic a little bit.
Okay.
We decided, I was talking to a friend of mine who has a story that she's a news, it's an issue that she wants to support. And we were talking about maybe she could do a guest comic. And then Derek was like, I don't know, I don't agree with that. So we had a big, long conversation. It was really cool. We had a big, long conversation about it. And we decided, you know, even if we don't agree with her, as long as she's okay with it, we'll put her comic up as a guest comic. We'll say we don't agree with it if we don't agree with it, and we'll just, like, allow that. Well, that opens the stage for other friends of mine who are libertarians who I don't agree with to do the same thing, or right, people who are not friends who maybe post mean things on my blog. Maybe they could do strips, and I want to do that. I want to start opening it up. I don't want to just hand cherry-pick the issues.
That's an interesting idea, and I wish you luck with that. It's an invitation, everybody, jump on that and make her regret that invitation. Now, I do have to move on, but first I will also say, in the spirit of her soon regrettable invitation, I'm going to make a regrettable invitation as well. If anybody who's listened to a topic of the Webcomic Beacon, and I've known that there's some that have two sides and we've been only on one side, I invite people who are going to behave themselves to want to come onto the show and discuss the other side of various things. And I fully always wanted that, even when we made the original show. Because there's a few I have in mind, and I know I've always wanted to make another show that went on the other side. So that is also an invite I probably will soon regret as well. But right now, this is the last segment of the show. And first, I got to say, Jason, too, you didn't really say a whole lot for the second half.
Jason, too.
I'm not very good at jumping in. I just kind of let other people say their thing. And if I ask, I'd say something. But
no, with politics,
I'm not very good at jumping
politics
in.
You got to get in there. You got to get in there with politics. You got to get in there with politics and interrupt and hit people with fish and all
these.
Haven't
you ever seen the McLaughlin group?
That's what the internet's for.
That's the problem. The problem is that it's all about shouting as loud as you can and hitting people with
la,
fish.
La, 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 la.
I feel like we're on Crossfire. Crossfire.
Was it really that interesting of a show?
Well, it was when Jon Stewart was on it for about, you know, an hour.
No, I'm talking about this one.
Oh, yes.
I don't know. Now back to C-SPAN.
We definitely didn't stay on topic, but...
Well, that never happens here. But we do have to, you know, we have to make money somehow. And by how we try to make money is by selling advertisement space. And right now, this week, on the Webcomic Beacon, on our Project Wonderful ads, our header ad is taken up once again by Jader and Crusader, who are no longer on hiatus, but they still have a bit of advertising cash, and they love the Webcomic Beacon. Go to jadenandcrusader.com and check out their webcomic. Also, once again, like clockwork, Yosh of YoshSaga.com has our tower ad, and it's the one with the girl nomming on the other girl's ears and
cat girl.
You purring? You're purring.
That was awesome.
Just
that again. I'm going to record it.
And that's like,
this is the difference between.
You don't get this on CNN.
That's what I was going to say.
Anyway,
this is the internet. We talk. This is crossfire with furries.
Yes. I'm the furry. Anyway, that was Yosh at YoshSaga.com. Our last one before. Usually, this one gets looked over. It is Lucky Lottery. Has our banner ad, and that is at luckycomic.net. Check that out. It is a short little vertical comic. Shoot, I was going to say more about that, but I totally forgot. Luckycomic.net, and that reminds me, we're going to have to do our comic impressions one of these days, where we look at the impressions, the comics that people have been sending us in our email, and give our first impressions, our quick impressions on their comic. We do have a few milestones to go over. The first one is from John Peters of Gypsy at Girl-O-Matic. Gypsy is hitting its 200th post, coming Monday, basically. And he also mentions that Girl-O-Matic itself has relaunched all free content, restarting titles, and have many new titles and such. That's at girlomatic.com/gypsy, or is where you could read Gypsy. And then, of course, girlomatic.com. You can check out the new Girl-O-Matic. I will try to get some of the Girl-O-Matic people on to tell us a little bit about the new site and everything. Also, as a message to John Peters, who's advertising on Ardra right now at ardracomic.com, your ad points to a misspelled URL, so people are not getting to your site.
I tried to get a hold of him the other day about that.
He has no freaking email anywhere. I can't find it.
I know. I couldn't find anything on his site, or on Twitter or anything. So
go ahead and fix that if you're listening to the show.
Fix the URL.
Let's see here. I also have a couple of milestones that George Ward, he does our notes. Show notes after the show. And also, we're working on bringing up the Beacon News Flash, which is going to be just a blog post, something that the GeekCast has been doing of things that have been happening during the week that we may not get on the show. So we're stealing an idea from the GeekCast once again.
About time. It's Turnabout's fair play.
And let's see. But right now, the milestones that George has to report is Xylia Tales, if that's correct, at its 2 years. It's hitting, and that's xylliatales.com. And also, Tau of Geek has hit 7 years, and that is at howofgeek.com. Let's see. Well, that's all we have for milestones. If you have a milestone that's, 100, 200, 300, 400, 500, 1,000, 2,000, or it's an anniversary of your comic, send it to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. And if we start getting way too many, we'll probably just stick them in the new Beacon News Flash that hopefully will be coming this Thursday. But we shall see. And because I am a filthy, filthy whore, I need to advertise.
That was the other way we tried to make money, and it didn't work out.
That's awesome.
There is now. Well, we kind of redid the Webcomic Beacon site, not really, but at least since I lost my computer and everything on it, aside from a backup disk from last year, I had to pick a new font for the Webcomic Beacon. And so I redesigned our ads, and Jason pointed out that I misspelled something, so I had to go and fix that.
It's immature. It makes your point, actually. Well, you misspelled amateur.
Yeah. anyway.
That is brilliant. You should keep it that way.
Too late. It's a pain in the ass. I already fixed it.
Man. That is awesome.
Now it's that is, like professional.
I love that.
Damn it. I should have changed it back. Oh, well. Anyway, we have a new on a website, Beacon, webcomicbeacon.com, underneath the banner, which actually now rotates with various guest and cover art that we've had on the show. So refresh the site a few times. You can see the art cycle through the banner. I'm really happy about that. Yay! Underneath that, there are various links that used to be on the side, but now these are like the common links. You can see the Listen Live on Sundays link, About Us, where you can go in there and look at the how we do it, how we do the podcast in there, a link to the forum, a link to fan and guest art, a link to the contact information, or basically our email. There's also a link for links, and a link for the episode archive. And as well as a link for advertising. And I will say, because we haven't had a whole lot of takers, I'm going to try this. I'm dropping our price for advertising on the show, so sponsoring the show, to $5, where you'll get two up to 30-second plugs or pitches, one at the beginning, one during a break, and then, of course, I mentioned before the end of the show. In addition to the on-air mentions, it includes a graphic ad link to your site that will be posted on the actual post and in any forums that we post the webcomic Beacon in. So it's extra advertisement. And for $5 or $10 extra, depending on whatever you want, you know, above the minimum $5, for the sponsoring, we will go and we'll do a Project Wonderful ad campaign with the extra money above the minimum $5. This just makes sense and helps out everybody. But we have lowered the price, so maybe we'll get some more takers on the show. If you know a show that's coming in the future, you can say, hey, I want that show to advertise on. Cool. If you hear the one that we're doing on Sunday, you have until Monday morning to let us know, because we can stick it in post. This is for any comic or art site. But for anybody that's doing a non-art, non-comic site, or commercial comic site, it'll cost you at least $10. Just because we want to give the amateurs a fair leg up. And, well, that's it, I think, for my personal plugging. Does anybody else have anything they want to mention, either about webcomics or politics?
plug away.
Well, Alyssa, if you actually do want to start a political podcast, where should people contact you? If you're going to be inviting other people or people who want to express their interest, should people contact you on your site or email?
Yeah, I mean, if anybody, it's something I really want to do. I've been thinking about it now for, I guess, about a week, and I really, really want to do it. Derek and I talked about it. And we kind of want we want to read the news, and then we want to have a roundtable discussion about the news.
Okay.
And so, if anybody's interested in being on it for every week, or just guest, or if somebody wants to make music for it, or something like that, Alyssa@girlversrobot.com would be where you would get me, or if you have ideas.
Excellent. And keep us posted about that, and once you start getting rolling, I'll be sure to mention it again.
Definitely.
All right, and let's see here. Well, that is pretty much it for the show. We don't really have that much more time about anything. So we're going to be going out, and we're going to be going going out in the order that we've been introduced. This has been Fess of Fessworks.com.
And this is Mark of AutumnLake.com.
This is Jason of Tweedix.com.
This is Jason of ArgerComic.com.
Am I supposed to?
You were. Yeah, go. Just go.
This is a very shy Alyssa of GrowVersRobot.com.
Thanks to everyone for tuning in, and be sure to come back next week when we are going to be talking about Sims Comics, or Sims Machinima Comics and Homelessness, with Robin of Allison Kev.
That's all for the Beacon. Be sure to tune in next week.
I like entering my name in things. That's probably why I get so much spam.
We have to let everybody know that we exist so that they can track us at every moment.
That's what Twitter's for.